For ambitious dads caught between work and home, this is where you find your footing. Here's your host, Jeff Hittner.
Welcome to the Ambitious Dads Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Hittner. You know, after more than 200 conversations with fathers, I realized we're just not talking enough. Not about our fears, our ambitions, how our kids are really doing, or how we're holding up in the middle of it all. This podcast is for the dads trying to build something meaningful and be present at home. The ones carrying a lot, questioning if they're doing enough, and craving honest conversation without the filters. If that's you, you're not alone. You're in the right place. Let's figure this out together. So today's guest is Dr. Corey Holmes. Corey is a former affairs officer for the U.S. Department of State. He's also a professor and an author, including of children's books. And most importantly, he is the father to a five-year-old son. Welcome.
Jeff, great to be here. I'm excited.
It's wonderful to have you here. So let's just jump right in. So what is fatherhood like for you these days? What's keeping you up at night? What's kind of, let's dive into a little bit of the difficulty at the moment. How about that?
Absolutely. So just for a little background, we currently live overseas in Dominican Republic. So there are a lot of challenges, right? The first one was the language challenge, the language barrier. This is his second school in 2 years, right? Because the first school, we just felt it wasn't enough, right? So he's at another school now. He's doing well. They have all kind of activities like chess and soccer and mathematics every day because I'm a big math guy. So that was very keen for me. But he does miss his friends back in the States. And so every blue moon, he'll say, "Daddy, you know, I want to go home." That's his phrase. Yeah. Like, "I want to go home." And we're like, "Well, son, you are home, right? This is home for the foreseeable future." It's like, "But no, I want to go home. I miss our house," because we have a town home in a DMV area with the red door. So he's like, I want to see my red door. And I'm like, "Buddy, I don't know when we'll see that red door. This is kind of our life right now." So just being consistent with him, letting him share his feelings of anxiety, and trying to reassure that as long as you have your mother and I, look, home is where we are, right? So please don't ever get attached to a shell or a frame, because this is kind of the lifestyle, you know, that was chosen for you. But if you embrace it, I definitely think you'll get a ton out of it.
Wow. And walk us through. So how did you guys end up in the DR?
Yeah. So we're both in government. Well, I'm no longer in government. The wife is still in government, doing foreign affairs. And so that's how we kind of got here to the Dominican Republic. We thought that it would be a great lifestyle to raise our son in. You know, as we kind of bitching offline, you know, we worry about safety and comfortability and, you know, folks just being nice, right? And so we kind of dove in and said, "Okay, we're going to do this." But again, it is not without its challenges, right? So, you know, when people hear the Dominican Republic, this is, you know, it's paradise. There's so many beaches, and I'm a golf guy. It's PGA sanctioned golf courses. And, you know, if you like rum and you like salsa dancing and you just like vibrancy, it's definitely a place for you. But just like anywhere else, it has its challenges, and you have to work through them, you know, day after day, right? And some days are better than others. And, you know, so we grew up with friends in Washington, D.C. that he had from the time he was 9, because he was in school from the time he was 9, you know, daycare, till the time he was almost turning 4. Right. So it was like a cohort of like 5 or 6 friends that he had that he kind of grew up with. So that was difficult, but he's an extrovert, kind of like myself. And so, you know, he's the person that will say, hey, guys, you want to play? Let's play. Right. And so I'm glad he kind of has that personality trait to kind of just get out there. And but also told him, everybody's not like you, buddy. So if they don't want to play on a certain Tuesday, that's okay. They might want to play on a Thursday or next Tuesday, right? Do not take it personal, you know, because you know at that age they're sulking. It's, oh, he or she doesn't want to play with me. And it's okay, buddy. Keep trying. Keep putting yourself out there, right? It is okay. I need you to bring your kindness and your exuberance to everyone you meet. And again, but some people won't like it, and that's okay.
And does he go to a Spanish-speaking school or an English-speaking school?
It's kind of hybrid. So it's technically the American school, but at that age, most of his classmates are still learning English. Mm-hmm. And so they're able to, you know, go back and forth. So my son kind of picked up the language.
What was that experience like for you as a dad? Because in Spain, most of the families come and they're afraid to put their kids in a Spanish-speaking school because they're so worried about like their experience of struggling with the language. And our experience has been that our kids adapted in 2 seconds. Like kids don't really care about words when they're really young. They absorb all the other forms of communication. Tell me what it was like, though, from like your own heart standpoint, because these sort of things where we put our kids in positions where they need to do that cliched thing that we're always talking about, build resilience, live outside their comfort zone. A lot of the times it's much harder for us as parents.
So definitely, obviously the anxiety was more, I had more anxiety than he did, right? Not necessarily the linguistic part of it, because that's why we chose this lifestyle, right? We wanted him to be multilingual. But it definitely was from a cultural standpoint, like, okay, look, most of your classmates might not think the same way you think or come from the same background, right? And so I had anxiety, not really towards his classmates, but maybe some of the parents. And, you know, they don't. Their parenting style is not like mine, or, you know. But again, like you said, I always try to remember, hey, sometimes you just have to push them, let them go out there and stand back and force yourself to just stand there and just observe, right? And only pull when it's absolutely necessary, but let them fail, right? Let them try, let them do their own thing. But it's definitely, you know, my wife is probably a little more anxious than I am when it comes to, you know, social settings, specifically with our son. But yeah, it's tough. It was tough early, right? You know, living in a community. We're not used to living in an enclosed environment where you see everybody almost 24/7, right? So it was great for him because he had other kids that he could play with. But, you know, when you see people every day, you know, you might not just be in the mood that day. Right. And, you know, kids have, you know, crazy personalities, and 1 minute they love each other. The next minute, you know, I can't stand them. They're not my friend. I don't want to be their friend anymore. Right. So, again, patience. Just have patience. Listen to your kids, right? Because a lot of times we talk over our kids. So listen to them, hear their point of view, and then you interject, right?
Has that come naturally? How have you learned to really listen to your kids?
So that's why I wrote the book, Jeff, Golf. So golf, it teaches you patience and being present, right? Golf can't be rushed, and neither can fatherhood. And so it's just learning to be consistent, showing up, and staying in the moment, right? So that's why the book kind of correlates golf and fatherhood, because it teaches those principles, both in trying to play the game of golf, because you're great one day and you're terrible the next. You might have a bad day being a father. And then that next day you're great, right? You might be disciplining your son. So my wife and I, we have, so we discipline our son differently, right? And so initially she was like, well, why are you being so hard on him? And almost like he wouldn't love me anymore. I said, no, kids actually want discipline. They want structure, right? I'm not here to be his friend. I'm here to be his father. And sure enough, an hour or two later, he forgot I chastised him. He's under my leg. You know, he's watching his show up under me. Daddy, can we watch the game? Or can you play chess with me or do something, right? He just wanted to be around me. And I'm looking at her like, see, I told you. They just want structure. That's their language of, oh, he cares. He cares because he's always here. He's going to, you know, whether it's right or wrong, he's going to say, hey, he's going to be there. And that's what I tell him every day. Right or wrong, I'm going to love you regardless. But when you're wrong, I'm going to tell you. And when you're right, I'm going to applaud you. So
I love that. I love that so much. So tell me a little bit more about, because there's a lot of difficulty in when parents will view different aspects of parenting differently, right? So you're talking about you believe it one way compared to your wife in terms of how to discipline.
Yes.
How do you engage with her on that? How does that kind of work its way through? These are hard things that not enough dads talk about is
yes.
We have very different philosophies sometimes to yes. Parenting our kids.
We definitely discipline differently, right? My wife, she's an only child. I'm the youngest of three and I have two sisters. And so my father didn't spare the rod, nor did my mother, right? But at a certain point, yeah, you know, mothers, it doesn't really hurt. The discipline doesn't hurt like it used to when you were younger. And I tell a lot of folks, my father probably only disciplined me the old school way, right? If you get my drift, probably two or three times in my life. But it was the fact that I disappointed him. I'll never forget, I was 19. And all he wanted me to do was call him when I got back from my first year of college. But you know, you're fresh off your first year. You're going into your sophomore year of university. And you're like, I'm a grown man. You know, I've been living four states away. What are you talking about? I don't have a curfew. And all he really wanted me to do was pick up the phone and have a conversation just to basically see if I was okay and how I was doing. But I was too busy wanting to run around with my friends that I hadn't seen all while I was in school. And so, man, we had a conversation and he basically just grabbed me and I couldn't believe it. It didn't hurt, but it hurt my feelings. And I started crying like a baby. And so that's what I'm trying to tell my wife. Like, it's not, we don't use the rod like we used to, right? So now I'm using more psychological warfare because my son doesn't want to disappoint me. But there are times I have to raise my voice, right? He has to understand. Sometimes it's just because I told you to, right? I'm going to try to explain as much as I can. But sometimes, son, it's just because I told you to. And I was the parent that said, oh, I would never do that, right? Because that's how I was raised, you know. Don't worry about it. It's because I told you so. No, there are certain instances where it's just because I know what's best for you. I have been on this earth longer than you have, and I'm only doing it for your benefit, right? And so I wouldn't say she tries to be his friend, but she's definitely, she talks to him more, I would say, like peer to peer. No, that doesn't really happen with us.
But does it create
sometimes, absolutely.
With each other? Like, does that happen in front of your son? Or
it has. And when I sense it, I try to change it. But you know, sometimes you're in the moment. Like,
sure. Look,
I'm trying to discipline him because I know what can happen if I don't address this in real time. Right. And sometimes it's not sitting him down for a 15-minute conversation. I mean, five-year-olds, they don't have that kind of attention span anyway. So sometimes you need to be boisterous, matter-of-fact, concise in 2 minutes so they can understand. And so, yeah, she Now she tries not to say anything in front of him, but it depends. It just depends on what it is, right? And so, yes, we are still a work in progress.
No, this is, it's a great point because it happens with us too. We definitely disciplining and structure is very different. I'm much more structured. Yeah. I'm much more likely to be honest about disciplining as opposed to really flexible about he was tired or this or that. And when it creates a friction, the friction is never with my son. It's that I'm trying to lead because I'm there first in the situation. And then my co-parent will actually feel like it feels like I'm being undermined. Right. And that's when it gets frustrating for me.
Yeah.
And at best I hold it in and we talk about it afterwards and we try to, try is a really strong word to be next time, if you disagree, you still need to wait and we'll talk about it afterwards. And I often disagree with how she will do the discipline for a very similar reason with you. It's much more roundabout. And I don't know if it's getting the point across sometimes.
Right.
If she's there first to deal with it, I'll let that be the case and then try to talk about it afterwards. And I'm sure there are plenty of examples where I don't do a good job with that. But on the disciplining one, it's first come, first serve is how I try to define it. But those are hard moments when we aren't aligned on how to do that sort of thing. And I really agree with what you said earlier, too. Kids need structure. I've seen my boys, in particular, since I have two rambunctious boys, do really well when they are really sure what the boundaries are and what the actual structure of a day is, as opposed to, vacation can be crazy if there's not structure on it. It is not vacation for me.
Yes.
But if I put the structure around it, then it can be different. So, yeah.
So real quick.
Yeah.
I'm a very organized person. My wife isn't. And so that is one of our biggest constant battles. And I tell her, look, our son is looking at us, right? So not only does he listen to all of our conversations, which she's keen on, but I'm also visibly, he's saying what we do, how we go about our day, how we go about our life. And so you can't tell him to pick up his clothes and clean up his room, and your stuff is not neatly organized, right? It's chaotic. I call it, organized chaos. And so we really, really go back and forth on that piece to the point where, I'm not going to lie, sometimes there are weeks I'm just whatever. But then my mind gets cluttered if I see clutter. So then I clean up and it's I have two kids now, right? Right. And so case in point last week. Okay. I had enough. Can't really tell you what to do, but Evan, clean this stuff up, put your toys up. You have several boxes for your toys. Your toy room is in one space, your room. And you also have an adjacent room for that. The living room is not your toy room. Pick this stuff up. And so, yes. Yes, yes. Again, they are keen on our conversations, but they are also keen on our actions. And I am a firm believer of, for most things, you can't ask your child to do some stuff that you don't do, specifically when you're talking about organization and being clean and tidy. They have to see that.
I think that's another wonderful point and goes way beyond just tidiness, right? It goes to everything. I wrote an article last week around this idea of what it means to be a provider as a man, as a father, and that as our definition of provider has changed, because it's not about finances, it's about providing emotionally as well, but also got me thinking a lot, and I wrote about it in the article, about how we also have developed a mindset around money that we probably inherited from our childhood. And so for my family, it was scarcity, right? Regardless of that, we were middle class.
Yeah.
But yeah. But that, like, again, it's do as I, if it's do as I say and not as I do, like, I can try to teach them a whole different way of thinking about money. But if I am acting as if money is always a scarce object, that if everything is a no first, right, in terms of what they desire, that sort of thing, I'm teaching at two different levels. I'm teaching at the level of what I'm saying versus what I'm doing. And I think that's true about what you're talking about from an organizational perspective with your family. We're pretty organized when it comes to the clothes and everything in the house, but we did a crap job when it came to telling them to clean up their toys. And it was interesting to see them happily do it at their friends' houses, clean up the toys and be like, wait a minute. Like, all this takes is a coordinated effort to be able to say, like, this is not how we leave things at our house.
Coordinated effort. Yes.
This is why these conversations are important. And this is why visiting, you know, friends of your children are important too, to just see like, oh, you can just tweak just a little bit here. And like, all of a sudden my kid's more tidy than I am. I love it.
Yeah. You said something in regards to financial stability and gender roles that I want to touch on. So, my wife and I, we met in the government space. I was a little further along than she. She has stayed in the same organization. We met in 2013. She has stayed in the same organization. I went on to teach at different universities. I worked on the Capitol Hill for a while and came back and forth from the institution that she works for. But we also grew up differently. So her mother was a stay-at-home mother. She was an educator. So she taught at every level, from university level on down to pre-K. And so for me, it was much easier as I pivoted out of government service, having the ability to be home more, specifically because we're out the country. And I don't go to a brick and mortar building every day, because I saw it, right? I saw a female go to work every day, along with my father, but I saw a female go to work every day. So that didn't really shake my psyche. What shook my psyche was that I came from the parents that I came from, right? That I am a worker, right? So while we were in the DMV, the DC area, not only was I working in government, but I also was working at New York University and Howard University, right? Mm-hmm. And so the financial piece, yes, I can't lie, Jeff. There are still certain days, and I'm okay now, but there are certain days where I'm like, wow, you know, you just feel a little bit better about yourself because the financial security is what it is, right? Because I went out and made sure. But right now, that's my wife's job, right? As I build, and yes, it's a business, but, you know, writing and curating narratives and stories is a passion of mine, as you can see. But it does mess with, I think, a lot of men's psyche. I don't think necessarily it's the money part, although it can be, but I think when you don't have something valuable to do consistently, because I don't know what I would do if I was in another country, left government, and just had all this idle time. Yeah, golfing, you know, for the first 2 or 3 months would have been great, and just going out and, you know, going to coffee bars and lounges. But at a certain point, me being who I am, right, I would have had to do something that I deemed valuable, not only to me, but to the world. Mm-hmm. And so I hope all fathers, you know, understand that being in the moment. So being an ambitious dad means that you can still be thriving in your sector of choice, but you don't have to negate the presence of your children, right? They can coalesce, right? They can be interwoven. They can be interconnected.
No, I couldn't agree more. And I also think, you know, one of the reasons I started Ambitious Dads was precisely the example you are building on, which is, you know, there is absolutely no reason that we can't, for any amount of time, be a stay-at-home dad, whether it's like full-time stay-at-home dad or just in different sort of seasons of life with your family. But the challenge is if we can't find people to relate to, right? If we can't find other dads to talk to, if you're the only dad at the playground, right, with all the other mommies at the playground. And
I remember that.
There's a lot of, obviously, I read a lot of articles that people write around fatherhood. And one person was noting that, like, at the playground, all the mommies, maybe they do or don't know each other, they're all sitting together chatting. All the dads are spread out separately on their phones or just engaged one-on-one, but not talking with each other as much. And you know, one of the goals of Ambitious Dads is to get us like recognizing how wonderful these conversations can be. Just talking about like what's freaking us out about our kids right now or what we want to do with them. Like, I love sharing, like, I just took my kids to this amazing playground, or I'm taking them to this amusement park once a year, and it is the best father-son trip I could ever imagine. Like, those are fun conversations, and ones that we need to be having so much more frequently, so much more frequently. Do you have you been building a group of dad friends in the DR and in the Dominican Republic? Is it easy? Is it hard? Like, how does that feel for you?
Yes and no. So I have one father, and he's a new father. His daughter is not even two yet. He's a neighbor. And so we definitely go back and forth. But since I've been married longer than him, and I've also been a parent longer than him, usually I'm the one receiving advice. I myself give me more advice, right? And really, I wouldn't say advice, just a perspective, right? Because every situation is different. So I'm like, here's a perspective. Here's what I did. If it fits, if it's applicable, cool. If not, yep. Okay, at least you know my perspective. But a lot of the fathers here, obviously, we're not in the same space, right? Because they're more my wife's space, right? So they're going to the brick and mortar place of work every day. And truthfully, I think it's only myself and my friend, because you have other fathers whose children are older, who are grown, who are adults. And then you have those who don't have kids, so they're not fathers, right? Who might be in my space and, you know, during my time frame where I can kind of fellowship and build camaraderie. So it's yes and no. Even with golfing, right? So I'm thinking of one of my golf partners. He doesn't have children, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just a different conversation. We can speak about golf. A real good friend of mine who I met here, who departed a couple months ago, who's actually coming tomorrow. We used to have great conversations because he has two beautiful daughters. I think 11, and the other one is an adult. And so he really got me, right? Because his wife at that point wasn't fully living here. So she was coming back and forth. So I really, because I, at some point I was thinking like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this, right? And so having him as a friend and a confidant to share his stories and how he and his wife kind of get over things and, you know, have to stick together and, you know, just the ups and downs of it. It was really valuable. And so I end up actually going to visit him. He lives in Texas. I end up visiting him a couple months ago. And I haven't had a camaraderie like that in a long time, because I have a set group of friends that I've known between 20 and 40 years. Like, my oldest friend I've been knowing since 1982. Right. And so when I build new I would say associateships, right? Because they very rarely, because I take the word friend deeply, right? I don't take that for granted. But this guy is truly, truly a friend. And like you said, he was definitely vulnerable with me. And so in turn, as we really became close, he started telling me some things about him and just being vulnerable. And I was just glad I was able to be there for him like he was for me.
Love it. So when it comes to how you are parenting like full time now, what are some of the things that surprise you about that, that were sort of unexpected, both positive and negative?
Yes. Let's go positive first. Cooking. Anybody who knows me before I was 35, Corey in the kitchen, man. But I would say cooking is therapeutic. One, my, you know, at this age, kids love to eat. My son, I'm like, where are you putting all this food?
Does he love to cook with you, by the way?
Yes. Now, so we make pancakes. So he has pancakes. That's his ritual, his Saturday morning ritual. So he, thank God, he's a morning riser like I am. And so by 7:30, we're making pancakes. And so he stirs it up. He gets the water or the almond milk and he stirs it up. We won't let him go near the stove yet, but he definitely does the pre-cooking of it. So cooking has been very therapeutic. Never thought I would be cooking as much. Like I probably cook 4 or 5 times a week. On Sundays, I'm making several meals just because whatever might happen during the week, his lunches have to be. And, you know, this guy eats chicken and spaghetti for lunch, right? And they only have 45. I mean, he's a 5-year-old. I just started making him turkey and cheese sandwiches. He's like, Daddy, I don't need all this stuff all the time. I just need something simple. So, but I'm like, you don't know how good you have it, son. On the negative side, it's exhausting, Jeff.
Yeah.
Right. So you still, like, I'm still an ambitious dad, right? I'm yearning to be a best-selling author, right? I have the one project out. The children's book is coming out this summer, and then I have an academic book coming out early in 2027. And so, yes, I still have these podcasts. I still have these book events in the U.S. I had an event in Taipei in February. So, yes, I'm still building my brand and still trying to execute my brand. And so it's been hard because, you know, children don't care. They always want you to be in the moment. Your time is theirs when you're in front of them. And then also when I'm on these trips, so I was in Taipei probably almost 2 weeks. And man, by that third day, I'm missing my son terribly. And so it's getting over that, right? Like, not necessarily what I'm missing. I just miss him. We have a lot of downtime together. Yes, we do a lot of activities, but we're just lounging in my chair and he's sitting beside me, you know, his head rubbing up against me. And, you know, he's watching what he's watching. I'm watching what I'm watching. And there's just silence and we're just being, right? So that's probably the hardest part between leaving him and being exhausted. Because like you said, I'm a real father. Whatever, we do it all. Right?
When you're exhausted, like, how does that change your parenting? Because we're all
you definitely become irritable. You're very short, but that's when I know. So again, I tell my wife, it's great when they're at school and work. So that's when I get to recharge. I'm on the Peloton. I'm doing some yoga. I might go for a swim. Right? Because I have to be my best self for him. If I'm not my best self, if I'm running on empty, I have nothing to give. Right? And so it's just being diligent. But again, it's still a lot. It's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I wrote about as well is like, you know, too often we're parenting on the fringes of the day, right? We actually give our best selves in the hours where our kids are at school and maybe we're focused at work or something else, mm-hmm. and figuring out how to have that energy, like kind of really front and center when your kids need it most, it can be really hard because lives normally aren't built around that. They're built around, like, you know, the middle of the day is not with your kids.
And, right.
Right. That's tough. Like, right. You know, I once in a while, like, here in Spain in particular, there's always lots of holidays. So when I get those holidays where it's the middle of the work week and yet there's a random day of no school.
Yes.
Like, yeah. All right. Well, I won't do any work either. And that'll be the day where I can be full on, like, with my best energy all day long with them. And it's a wonderful gift. Absolutely wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. But I will say too, sometimes work calls for work. And so, for instance, if there was a holiday and I'm on this podcast with Jeff, I have taught my son, hey, daddy's working. If he sees me in this space, he knows to be quiet and not say anything until I am done. So I've prepped him. You know, what do you need before I get on this call? Right. Before I go to work. Right. Because mommy and daddy's work looks different. Right. You know, mommy's working when you don't see her. But just because you see daddy a whole lot more doesn't mean I'm not working as well. Right. And so setting those barriers too, I will say, is definitely tantamount.
And is there any particular way you're kind of keeping up with his development stages? Like, are you reading about it or watching something, or especially because it's a little bit harder, as we were just talking about, to talk to other parents about what's going on?
So I share everything with my core group of friends, right? So when he's
WhatsApp with everybody, or
absolutely. When he's at a play or, you know, a big event at school, I'll send it to my friends, you know, to kind of get their feedback. Yeah, you know, as an academic, you're always reading stuff. My wife reads a little more about parenting than I do.
Why do you think that is?
To be truthful, I think because they're afraid, right? And so my wife in general, she was very afraid of the unknown, right? Because she always wants to control it. And I'm like, you can't control parenting, though. But I knew that going in, like, there was going to be some ebbs and flows. It's going to be points where I had to pivot, right? I just knew Evan was going to be this way. Oh, no, he's not, right? And so I have to adjust quickly. She thought it was archaic and mundane. Boom, 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 boom. No. But we did this. Okay. But that's not his personality, right? I think, and I won't generalize, but I think I, more than my wife, knew that he was going to be his own person. So she was a violinist, right? So she played throughout university. So she wanted him to play. That was basically one of her big dreams, one of her priorities. He had a violin at the age of 3. Does he like the violin? No. Now, what I did tell her was, because I played the piano, and it seems like he's more keen on the piano. But what I told her was, you have to be more consistent too. So if you want him to play, you have to set a time every week where you all practice, even if it's 15 minutes. And it's not going to look the same like when you were 5, right? For whatever reason. But be consistent. Because once you stop, he's like, oh, okay. He'll go on to something else, especially if he's not passionate about it, right? And so certain things I do believe that you have to expose your children to, even when they don't like them or, you know, aren't passionate about them at this stage, right? Because he might be 9 or 10 and all of a sudden wants to be passionate about the violin. Well, now he has the prerequisite skills. He's not starting from stage 1.
Yep.
So that's the difference between the parent and the child.
That's what I'm still hoping about for my kids, becoming professional soccer players, because they're not very interested. But maybe when they're, 3 or 4 years from now,
probably
I'm not going to hold my breath, but we'll see.
Okay. All right. Thank God my son loves golf.
I love it. Yeah. Well, this has been a wonderful conversation. I love to end these, you know, since parenthood is so messy, do you have a particular ridiculous body excrement or vomiting or crazy story from your son that you kind of carry with you as, man, that was just nuts when that happened? You may have blocked it out.
Right before we moved here, we had a fire in our home.
Oh,
so
no.
We were out of our home for a year. We were living out of a hotel and then an apartment that the insurance company had set up for us. And so we were back in the home for maybe 3 months, and then we left the country. So I think he had a lot of anxiety. And so let's just say he would use the bathroom on himself often at night. So I don't know if it was anxiety. Obviously, it was anxiety, fear, being in a new place.
Sure, sure.
But I'm like, but he was like 3 or 4. And I'm like, buddy, what is going on? And he would be like, and I mean, to the point where you wouldn't even know until you smelled it. Like, I know you smelled this, son. Like, what is going on? But as I recollect, I know it was anxiety, all the new change. And again, like I told you, even here he changed schools. So I'm sure he was like, man, daddy, like, we just moved here. You put me in a new school. I made new friends. Loved by teachers, and they loved him. And then you take me out of the school. Like, come on. So, you know, giving him grace.
Is he outgrown it then? Or is
absolutely.
Yeah. And that's the whole thing, right?
It's a switch.
Yeah. It sounds like you did a good job not jumping to any long-term conclusions about it.
Now, again, you know, some people would say, you know, does he need to see a therapist? Relax. Relax. You know, I'm trying to think back if, you know, my parents moved me across the world, you know, at that age, like I said, I've had friends, some friends since I was 3 and 4 years old, that we went all the way through high school with. He will never have that. Right. And so, but, you know, kids are adaptable, man.
They certainly are. Corey, it has been an absolute pleasure to chat with you. Have a wonderful rest of the day with your family, and let's definitely keep in touch.
Absolutely, Jeff. Thank you so much for allowing me to be on the platform. Ambitious Dads, you are doing yeoman's work because this is needed. Dads, please be vulnerable.
Absolutely. What a great thing to say.
Right. Yeah. Our mental health will be so much better. Be vulnerable. Let it out. Thank you again, Jeff.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Ambitious Dads Podcast. If you enjoyed this conversation and want more insights on balancing ambition and fatherhood, make sure to hit that like button, subscribe to the channel, and turn on the notification bell so you never miss an upcoming episode. Check out the links in the description for our newsletter and more resources to help you live intentionally as a dad. See you in the next episode.